It's Lars. Thank you for checking out my podcast, and have a great day.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you on a Monday evening. I'm live tonight from the studios of WBRP. That's Talk Radio 107.3 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm glad to be with you. I'm not very happy about the news that we got just a couple of hours ago that Otto Warmbier has died. He is the young man who was in North Korea and has been held there for a year and a half. He carried out what the North Koreans said was a crime, a war crime, because he apparently tore a poster off a wall. And he was sentenced to 15 years of hard labor. He was just returned, as you know, to his family last week. He was in terrible shape when he returned, and he just passed away today. So in other words, North Korea has taken the life of a young American citizen. Now, you can say what you like about what he was doing there or why he traveled to North Korea, but I think we can all agree on this. The young man did not deserve to die for this, and North Korea bears the responsibility for his death. It sounds as though the Trump administration is going to take a hard line on this, and I think, well, they should take a hard line on this. North Korea is a murderous regime. It treats its own people terribly. It is starving 20 million residents of North Korea to death. It is posing a danger to the United States by developing both missiles and nuclear weapons. And now they have taken the life of a young, innocent American citizen. And I'd like to know what we're going to do about it next. Today, we're also mourning the innocent lives lost after another terrorist attack in London. A van ran into a group of people outside of a mosque late last night. What will we learn about this targeted killing? Dr. Henry Miller joins me to talk about the government and regulation and how they are destroying some harmless and vibrant flowers, believe it or not. President Trump has rescinded some of the previous administration's policy made with Cuba, including border security and trade regulations will be changed. Steve Hecht will join me to talk about the issues plaguing Central America. And one candy maker has decided to not taste all the colors of the rainbow and to choose just one. Does that send out an inappropriate message of some kind? And I want to make sure that you cast a vote in my quick poll. You'll find the question online at LarsLarson.com. Should the government ban disparaging trademarks? In this case, the test case before the U.S. Supreme Court involved a band, a musical group, that decided that the name The Slants was appropriate. It was certainly attention-getting because the U.S. government refused to trademark that name because they said it was offensive to some people. You know, whether you like the name or not, it was chosen by Simon Tam, who is himself an Asian American, and he chose it to make a point, and he got some attention for his band. And thankfully, the U.S. Supreme Court came out on his side with a decision that says the United States government has no business regulating somebody's name, whether you find it offensive or not. And it's interesting. I know that all of us can cite examples around our own communities of names that one person or another may find offensive, but it is not the government's business to regulate that. And the reason I say that is the First Amendment to the Constitution makes it clear the government has no business regulating speech that is not threatening or dangerous. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Sheena's calling in from Baton Rouge, where we're broadcasting tonight. Sheena, welcome to the Lars Larson Show, and what's on your mind?
Hi, Lars. I'm a big fan of yours. Welcome to Baton Rouge. I'm glad you're here. I'm so excited.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much. Well, we've been welcomed with amazingly warm hospitality in this community, and we're thankful for that.
Well, I love your work, and I'm a complete fan, so I'm, like, so excited right now. What I was calling about had to do with the police situation. In commenting on that, I am what you call a quote-unquote millennial, or what people like to laugh about, where I live in a social media age. Well, I think the issue is the media. The media pushes all of these bad police shootings, all of the bad things that happen, but they never show anything good. If anyone goes on any other outlet, YouTube or any other social media, Facebook, there are thousands of videos that show police officers doing the right thing. And I think that it's the media pushing it more.
I wish they would. And Sheena, to some extent, it's the nature of the business, because I always tell people, when I was a reporter, and I was a reporter for a long time, I said, we always do stories about the house that burned down and not the 100,000 houses that didn't burn down tonight. And
exactly.
To some extent, that's our fault for not doing the good news stories as well as the bad news stories. But can you imagine how many people are sitting out there tonight who are listening to this, who are saying, yeah, I remember when the police came to my house to solve a problem? And nobody ever calls the police to their house because there's good news. They're usually calling because something is going wrong. And can you imagine all the millions and millions of people who are so grateful for that night that officers showed up at their door? And you're right, that doesn't make the news, does it?
No, and I think that's what needs to happen. It needs to be a shift. For every bad thing that is posted, why don't we as a community, as people, post the good that we see? Like, I know I post the good videos of the officer that was able to de-escalate a situation and be able to take down someone in the appropriate way, or what they call the appropriate way, depending on who you ask. I think for everyone, for every bad, we need to just counter with something good.
I'll tell you what, Sheena, there's a great idea for people. You could call it Post the Blue, and maybe somebody out there will set up a Facebook page called Post for the Blue. And because I know they don't all wear blue uniforms, but that's all right. Yeah, they'll get the point. And if they have a good experience where the police officers have come and resolved some bad situation that could have gotten a whole lot worse, that they post a little video and talk about how grateful they are for those men and women who serve in uniform. It is a pleasure to be in your town, and I thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Dan. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Lawrence Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I want to talk about this police thing a little bit. And I think the problem in this country is there's a caste system. And it's the ordinary citizen, it's the firemen and the police officers. Let me give you an example of that. I have a friend that's a fireman. Every one of his cars, he's retired. He has the fireman stickers on the back. And he's admitted to me, if he stops, he's going to get a free pass. Go ahead and comment.
Well, that may be the case. I don't know. I know most of my friends in law enforcement and in the fire service are not people who go out and take freebies simply because of who they are. And if your friend is doing that, I question the morality of doing something like that. But it may be happening. And if it is happening, then, you know, if there's professional courtesy between between police and firefighters, I'm not going to admire that, because I think everybody should be held to the same standard. But if it's happening, it should stop. And it can stop from both sides. You can say, I don't choose to take favors from the police simply because of my line of work. Let's go to Roland. Hey, Roland, welcome to the Lars Larson Show.
How you doing, sir? Hey, I'm a naysayer because I don't believe that cops should go after or police officers should go out there and do their job with political blinders on, and I don't believe that they should go out there with one arm tied behind their back. And if they have to kill a perpetrator, or if something like that happens in the line of duty, they're sworn to protect us and each other. And they want to go home at the end of the shift just like we all do. And so I am not beaten up on the police at all. And I guess I'm a facetious naysayer.
That's all right, Roland. I can take a facetious naysayer from time to time. Coming up in just a moment, some harmless little flowers are being destroyed because they were genetically modified, but not Washington approved. We'll talk to our friend Dr. Henry Miller from Stanford. Coming up next, we're live in Baton Rouge, and you've got the Lars Larson Show.
Lars Larson, your dog in the fight.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you tonight, live from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and the studios of WBRP, which have been loaned to me just for the night, and I'm very appreciative of all that. Glad to have you with me as well. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Our friend from the Hoover Institution at Stanford University, Dr. Henry Miller, joins me now. Doc, good to have you back on the program.
Always great to be with you, Lars.
Listen, what is this story about the killer petunias?
Yeah, this is goes to the op-ed that I had in the Wall Street Journal, ironically titled Attack of the Killer Petunias. This is one of those examples that really makes American taxpayers shake their heads at the waste and abuse of our tax dollars by government regulators. It's a very interesting and ridiculous story. A couple of years ago, a Finnish plant biologist was standing at a train station in Finland and noticed in a planter that there were bright orange petunias, and he knew from his experience that these don't occur naturally. That's not a natural color for petunias. And he recalled that such varieties had been developed 20 years earlier in Germany as an experiment. A single gene was moved from corn into petunias, gave it a bright, beautiful orange hue, but it was never commercialized because the regulatory barriers are such that developing a new genetically engineered plant, and this gene had been introduced by the new molecular techniques, the commercialization of a genetically engineered plant costs on average $136 million. And
Before we go any further, how in the world can it cost $136 million to get government approval to have a flower that's a different color?
It's absurd, but that's the story. And in effect, ornamental flowers are collateral damage. The regulations are really intended for food crops, but even those for pest-resistant papayas or pest-resistant corn or soybeans, it shouldn't cost that, especially given that we have all this experience with dozens of varieties that differ very little from the new varieties that are coming along. But the costs, the regulatory costs, are still in the tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. It's crazy. So what happened is this Finnish biologist pulled a stem and tested it in his laboratory and found that indeed it was genetically engineered, that it contained a gene from corn. And he made the mistake of sort of semi-inadvertently tipping off a Finnish regulator who then blew the whistle internationally. And the regulators did their thing and in North America and in Europe demanded that growers and distributors incinerate these varieties of petunias. And plant breeding is interesting. You get a trait that's favorable, and then it gets crossed into all sorts of new varieties of the same species. And so we're now up to 40 varieties of petunias in the United States, identified by USDA, that need to be incinerated.
Now, what would be the potential hazard, and why would the FDA in our government choose, or the regulators in Finland, choose to identify changing the color of a fruit or a vegetable or a plant as being something that has to be banned?
There is no...
Is there any sensible argument?
No, there is none whatsoever, because the gene in question comes from corn. So this is not a gene from poisonous mushrooms. It's not a gene from the bacteria that cause botulinum that code for botulinum toxin. This is from corn, which doesn't have harmful genes. And the regulators, this is USDA, not FDA in this case. the regulators freely admit that there's no conceivable harm, either to human health or animals or to the environment. And also, petunias are annuals, so these will be gone by wintertime anyway. So it's completely ridiculous. And in the Wall Street Journal op-ed, I had a couple of suggestions. Short-term, USDA could simply declare enforcement discretion, which in essence means no harm, no foul. We're not going to take any action at all. Nothing needs to be done. That's one possibility. A second is, if they really don't want them sold, they could direct the growers and vendors to donate them to pediatric hospitals, to kids on the cancer ward. But the overarching issue here is that regulators and their policies need to recognize that there are some things that don't need to be regulated at all, and others that do need to be captured. And the article concluded that there's a difference between petunias and plutonium, and regulators need to finally recognize that difference.
Doctor, let me ask you about this. Do you get any sense that the people in the regulatory fields in government understand that what they're doing is completely ridiculous, and having that realization, maybe go to their bosses and say, "Boss, do we really need to regulate the color of petunias?" Or is there no sense on their part that regulation, just for the sense of, or for the sake of regulation, makes any sense at all?
I think some do, but you would think that since these kinds of decisions are made at many levels, as the decision to destroy these flowers goes up the line, somebody would spike the decision and laugh and say, "No way, we're going to do what makes sense here." And, you know, it reminds me of when Frank Young was my boss, when he was the FDA commissioner years ago. He used to say, sometimes you have to let common sense intrude on regulation. And at FDA, we tried to when it was appropriate, but that seems not to be the rule at USDA these days at all.
Doc, I really appreciate you coming on, because I've had the same experience. I've gone to my boss on occasion, and although I'm not in the kind of business that you're in, to say, hey, there's this rule that says we can't do this, but if it doesn't make any sense, are we free to simply ignore the rule or maybe even get a change? And on occasion, I've been able to make it happen. Thanks for the work you do at the Hoover Institution, Doc, and thanks for the time.
Always good to be with you. Thank you, Lars.
Glad to have you on as well. That's Dr. Henry Miller from the Hoover Institution. Hey, I want to remind you, it's summer vacation time for most of us, but scammers are hard at work. Here are some tips to avoid becoming a victim. Before making a deposit on that beach rental, check the realtor's license and make sure they're legit. Watch for door-to-door solicitors who want to take your money, and tell them you'll check them out online. At hotels, beware of the fake menus requesting credit card numbers for late-night eats. And if you're relocating, hire only the most reputable moving companies. Somebody's identity is stolen every 2 seconds in America. It can be stolen in ways you may not detect if you're only monitoring your credit. The thieves use your info to go online, say for an online payday loan in your name. LifeLock detects a wide variety of threats. If they find your info, they send you an alert. If there's a problem, U.S.-based restoration specialists work to fix it. Nobody's going to prevent all identity theft or monitor every transaction, but LifeLock can uncover the threats you may miss. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LifeLock. Use the name Larson. That's Larson for 10% off on your LifeLock membership. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% today.
The Lars Larson Show. Bring honestly provocative talk everywhere you go. Search iTunes for the Lars Larson Show podcast.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Happy to be using the studios of WBRP, Talk Radio 107.3 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And glad to be with you tonight. If you want to send me an email, it's talk@larslarson.com. And yes, they all come directly from me. Unfortunately, my guest, Steve Hecht, has decided to, we'll get him lined back up on the show when the guys back in the main studio take care of that. He's written about the issue of what's going to happen to Cuba under the new Trump administration policies, which are replacing the policies that were put in place by President Barack Obama. But unfortunately, Steve's not on the line right now. But he wrote about this. He said a turnaround for Cuba and the Northern Triangle will require more than amending the trade and travel rules enacted under President Obama. His embrace of the regime in Cuba and Fidel Castro's allies in Central America did more harm than that. And we've got to talk to him about this because this is a big concern. I'm glad to see that President Obama's decision to make a major change in Cuba policy without consulting the American public, without consulting America's representatives on Capitol Hill, I think was a foolish thing for him to do. But he did it in any case. He decided to open up to Cuba in a way that we had not done before, and he did it without any major concessions by the Cuban leadership. And the Cuban leadership still treats its own people very, very badly. And on that note, it's my pleasure to welcome to the program Steve Hecht, who's a freelance writer for the Daily Caller. Steve, good to have you back on the program. Thanks for taking the time tonight.
Thank you very much. Very glad to be with you.
So when we hear that Donald Trump has changed some of the policies that were put in place under President Obama, is that going to be enough? You've suggested in the piece you wrote for Daily Caller that it's not nearly enough.
Oh, I think that what Trump announced is about as much as he could do, and I think it's going to be very helpful. And the most helpful part of it is that he's announced it, which supports people like Damas and Blanco, for instance, that wrote an open letter to him. People living under repression need to know, we know this from the old Soviet Union, that they need to know that the United States supports them.
So how do we do more than that? Is it going to take action by the U.S. Congress?
I don't think so. I don't think that there's much more that we can do. The main thing is that all you can do is make sure that you're not supporting repression with funds. And what Obama did was throw Castro a lifeline so that he could have dollars coming in. That's what he needed. And other than that, there's really not much more that I don't think you could do.
So do these actions take away that lifeline? Because there still will be different connections today to Cuba from the United States than there were before Obama made the changes, right?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, you have you're reducing the cash flow. Trump's new rules, his executive order, is going to reduce the amount of money that's going into the repressive regime.
So what more could we do? Because there has to be something. Because I had hoped at the time that if we renegotiated our deal with Cuba, that any changes would come with some kind of changes offered up by the Cuban regime. And yet most of what was offered up, it seems from the reports I'm reading, wasn't delivered on in any case, that political repression is not stopped, that even when President Obama went down to visit Cuba, that there were actually people thrown in jail as protesters that same day.
Yeah, I kind of lost you there.
Steve, are you still there? It sounds like we may have lost Steve altogether, but unfortunately, that's too bad. Steve, thank you very much. I very much appreciate the time. Glad to get your phone calls and emails because I'm glad to see that we're going back to something like the pre-Obama policies toward Castro, the Castro regime, and not toward Fidel Castro, but toward all of the leadership that he left in place, his brother and the rest of them. Now, I want to bring back up Otto Warmbier. Otto Warmbier, as I told you at the beginning of this hour, is the young man, 22 years old. He served 18 months behind bars in North Korea, and then he was sent back to the United States. He was already in terrible shape when he was brought back to the United States last year, and he died about 2:20 this afternoon at the University of Cincinnati Medical Center. His family issued a statement that was obtained by NBC News. The family said that when Warmbier returned home last Tuesday, he was unable to speak, unable to see, unable to react to verbal commands. And as the family said, unfortunately, the awful, torturous mistreatment our son received at the hands of the North Koreans ensured that no other outcome was possible beyond the sad one that we experienced today. So the family knew when he returned to the United States that his life was effectively over. The question then next is whether or not the United States does anything about it. And is there a way to send a message to North Korea about what the North Koreans have done in this case? By the way, there's a new report, by the Daily Caller, that says the people being hired by Robert Mueller, the special counsel that's been hired to allegedly investigate the ridiculous argument that there is some kind of collusion going on between the Trump administration and Russia. He is now hiring attorneys, one attorney after another, who have ties to the Clintons, either in the form of campaign donations or other kinds of ties that they have. Mueller's most important hire to date, according to the caller, is Deputy Solicitor General Michael Drebin, who is something of a legend. Drebin is a criminal appellate law expert who has argued over 100 cases before the Supreme Court. He is widely considered to be one of the best attorneys in the Department of Justice. Two veterans of Hillary Clinton's legal team were also at Mueller's side, and former FBI Chief of Staff Aaron Zebley and DOJ veteran Jeannie Rhee, each represented the former Democratic presidential nominee in litigation connected to her use of a private email server during her time as Secretary of State. Now, when you consider the kinds of people that are being brought on board by Robert Mueller, who seem to have a decided dog in this fight, I think we should be concerned about where this is all going. Is this aimed at ferreting out the truth? And I think we've already got the truth in this case. Or is it aimed at being sort of a legal Death Star to go after President Trump? It seems to be what they're aiming at. Now, at the website Lawfare, Bush-era Department of Homeland Security veteran Paul Rosenzweig pronounced Drebin's hiring as the worst thing that happened to Donald Trump this week. He is possibly the best criminal appellate lawyer in the United States of America. And other lawyers have offered the same kind of assessment. Mueller has also tapped Andrew Weissman, who is head of DOJ's criminal fraud unit for the task force. A veritable reservoir of complex financial crimes, Weissman has led the largest white-collar prosecutions in American history, including cases that brought down Enron executives and loyalists of the Gambino crime family. A factory would probably be appropriate as well. The Hillary Clinton legal team at Mueller's side, that also suggests that this has political implications that a lot of us have not considered. He says there is nothing comparable to the kind of pressure and obligation that this kind of job puts on your shoulders. That's what Richard Benveniste, who is the Watergate prosecutor, says. He told it to CNN. Having been there before gives him the confidence to know how to do it and how to do it right. Excuse me for doubting all this, but I really think this is aimed only at trying to sabotage our new American president. And I think it's a sad statement on what's going on in America that we now have a president who's being investigated for nothing. And as a result of that, we're going to have a president who's not able to get as much done as he should be able to get done if he actually didn't have his time occupied by these kinds of activities. Again, a thank you tonight to our friends here at WBRP in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Glad to get your phone calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I'll be back in just a moment, live from Baton Rouge. You've got the Lars Larson Show.
Warning. Right winger coming through on the Lars Larson Show.
Live today from Louisiana, and glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Mackenzie Llewellyn writes in, Lars, I'm a longtime listener, and I thought you'd find this interesting. I follow People Magazine and the Today Show on Instagram, as well as millions of others. I thought it was unusual and certainly not fair that last week on President Trump's birthday, They didn't mention anything about it. But the day before, the Olsen twins got an acknowledgement, and the next day, Neil Patrick Harris got one, too. I checked back, and what do you know? Obama had an entire story about himself on his birthday. Instead of going all left and writing a negative comment or starting a riot, I simply unfollowed the two pages. It caused me great sadness to see such hatred for somebody at this point. In my opinion, what the extreme left has done far outweighs anything President Trump has done. Keep up the great show, signed Mackenzie Llewellyn. To your calls now at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Jane's on the line. Hey, Jane, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Thank you for taking my call. You know, it is incomprehensible that we have supposedly educated men and women in Congress who are investigating or instigating a witch hunt against Donald Trump. And this is drawing attention away from Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, who hopefully should be tried for treason and obstruction of justice. You know, it's time for these legislators to wake up, grow up, and stop acting like spoiled children whose goodies have been taken away from them. They need to come along and stop wasting our money, and they need to take care of the needs of the people and stop incrementally changing and undermining the laws of our Constitution that safeguard our freedoms.
Very nicely said, Jane. Thanks very much. I appreciate the call. From our emails, Don Hawkins writes in, Lars, in what can only be considered the modern version of the Crusades at this present day, this witch hunt being carried out by the Democrat Party. With near religious fervor, the Democrats scour the countryside in frantic search of hearsay, mysterious Russian demons, phosphorus ghosts of collusion that only appear to the Democrat mindset. The only thing missing in this modern book of alt-left revelations are the white robes adorned by the upside-down American flag of liberalism. And I couldn't agree with you more about that. The fact is that there's nothing there. And if there were something there, I would think there's something that we would have to explain. But instead, what we've got is nothing. We have absolutely nothing in the Russia investigation. The Democrats say, but that still means we have to keep looking to see if we can find something. Well, how long do you keep looking for something? And where are the reporters who should be asking the Democrats, what is it exactly that you're looking for? And if you can't explain it to us and tell us what it is you're looking for, then we'll just have to assume you have nothing that you can refer to. From our Facebook page, and that's The Lars Larson Show on Facebook, John writes in, Lars, when somebody of the left is attacked, and he's referring to the Steve Scalise attempted assassination, the left screams about guns or harsh rhetoric or the Tea Party or Sarah Palin. When somebody on the right gets attacked, the left solemnly calls for unity. When somebody on the left is attacked, the attacker's past is parsed for any indication of connection to the right, which is nearly never there. When somebody on the right is attacked, the attacker is a nut, and the Trump climate is at fault. As always, it's about guns. I feel bad for the Congress folks, but they did have security to protect them. We do not. Signed, John. John, thanks very much. And this comes in from Sam about all the discussion we had last week about the Shakespeare in the Park rendition. He says, and this is the one where Donald Trump is in a mock assassination on stage in New York City. When I first heard about Shakespeare in the Park's rendition of the play Julius Caesar, I was shocked and angry, he writes. But then I started to laugh. That's right, I laugh. For you see, I started remembering the history of the Roman Empire. Julius Caesar lived at the beginning of the Roman Empire. He actually started the Roman Empire. He created the foundation for an empire that would last for 400 years in the West and 600 years in the East. He was and still is one of the greatest generals and statesmen that the Roman Empire ever produced. A man who is still considered today to be a genius, Julius Caesar became more famous and more powerful after his death. He was made into a martyr upon his death, and 2 years later, just 2 years, mind you, his status was raised by the Roman Senate to God. Only a few Roman citizens ever reached that level. The Romans worshipped and studied him for hundreds upon hundreds of years. Christianity stopped the worshipping, but even today we study him. Liberals and socialists may have gotten a shock value from the death scene, but perhaps also foreshadowing of their own demise. For the senators who opposed Caesar were hunted down and either killed or committed suicide within a few years of his death. For Donald J. Trump to be compared to Julius Caesar, one of history's greatest, most legendary figures, who is still widely known and admired 2,000 years after his death, is an honor. Signed, Sam. Send those emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. That's talk@LarsLarson.com. They all come right to me. And if you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. It has been a real pleasure to be here in Louisiana, and a real pleasure to work with the folks at WBRP. It was very nice of them to loan me a studio for the day so that I could do my radio show, as well as get a chance to check out some of the great food here in the southern part of the United States. I wanted to leave you with one little story to think about. It involves a Michigan car dealership and a bum, a panhandler, a man who was out panhandling, had a sign, like so many of them do, begging for money. So the car dealership offered the man a full-time job, and the man turned the offer down. As told by WDIV out of Brighton, Michigan, disappointed with his response, managers at the dealership put a sign under the hood of a car next to where the man was standing to discourage people from giving him money. The sign seemed more like a public service announcement. It said, "Please do not give anything to this panhandler. We offered him a full-time job at $10 per hour. He said, I make more than any of you, and he did not want the job. Please donate to a more worthy cause." And that's fantastic. Felicia Tubbs, who works at the Shell gas station across the street from this car dealership in Brighton, Michigan, she said over the course of a year, a duo of panhandlers would stand at the street corner begging for money. Drivers knew them and described them as father and son. At first, you feel bad for them, but then it's day after day, week after week. Police reportedly arrested the duo on Tuesday, but Tubbs, the young lady at the station across the street, said the same men were back on the side of the road shortly afterward. She said she snapped a picture of the men with a news sign that reads, "You can't afford a one-bedroom apartment on $10 an hour." The other sign reads, "Median income in Livingston County is $70,000. Michigan State Troopers say the two men were arrested for vagrancy and disorderly conduct. Their names were not released because they haven't been arraigned yet. The dealership has since taken down the sign. Well, good for them, because in this day and age, if you can't go out and find a job in this kind of economy, at least try to make an effort at it and don't just stand and beg for money, because you make better money there. Live from the studios at WBRP, you're listening to the Lars Larson Show from Louisiana.
The Lars Larson Show.